Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case we will hear this morning is St. Paul Fire Marine Insurance Company versus Village of Franklin Park. Mr. Durkin.
May it please the court. My name is Michael Durkin. I represent the Village of Franklin Park. This matter comes before this court on the appeal of a determination on summary judgment that St. Paul Insurance Company had no duty to defend the Village of Franklin Park. The issues before this court are whether St. Paul had a duty to defend claims brought against the Village of Franklin Park arising out of the Village's administration of a fire pension fund, and whether St. Paul's filing of a declaratory action 34 months after the underlying litigation was initiated was timely. At 34 months is a critical issue, which I will return to later.
When you're on the topic of timeliness, I think the first time issue that concerns me is whether this lawsuit was filed in time. Because as I understand the record, the fund issues a written demand to the village as early as August of 2000. And this lawsuit isn't filed until much later. The lawsuit's filed in 2002. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. The underlying litigation was commenced on January 30th, 2002. Mm-hmm. The letter that the court is referring to in August of 2000 was not a letter which implicated a demand under the policy. It was not a claim that the fund costs were improperly calculated by the village. What that letter said, and it's actually alleged in the underlying complaint, in the original complaint, it's characterized as asking the village to pay additional funds from a source other than real estate taxes, which is the funding source for the pension fund. In fact, they asked for money to be paid from the village's municipal utility tax, additional funds above and beyond what the village was required to expend through its real estate taxes. And the purpose of that is alleged in the underlying complaint. Is that letter requested that additional funding would then raise the village's, or actually lower, its unfunded liability. Now, that's an important concept for this case, and I would ask the court to bear with me for a moment while I go into that unfunded liability. Unfunded liabilities in these pension funds, particularly the fire pension fund at issue, is an assumed number present in all of these pension funds. The funding statute itself requires a portion of the calculation to include an amortization of that unfunded liability over a 40-year period. And with an example of what was going on with the stock market this last week or several weeks, the values of those funds are changing, and if their assets don't meet what their future liabilities are, that unfunded liability goes up or expands or contracts, but depending on how the asset values are. So that demand back in August of 2000 did not trigger a claim that was sounded in whether the village properly calculated the cost that it had to collect through its real estate tax levy.
Except that, I guess my concern is that's a very particular way of looking at this. The plaintiffs, actually as early as 1999, are concerned that there's not enough money in this fund. They're making complaints, and they issue a demand. Yes, there's this other money, but it looks to me like the gist of it is you need to put more money into this fund. And if that's what they're saying, then that's really the same claim that's made later, whether it's from real estate taxes or whether it's from utility, whether it's from, you know, money the village just got because somebody gave it to them. I'm not sure why that matters when the point of the fund is you are required to give us more money.
It matters, Your Honor, because the difference matters because the litigation that was commenced did not ask for pay this money from just any old source. It then hearken to what the insurance policy was purchased to cover, a claim saying, you know what, you calculated the formula, you utilized the formula, or you failed to utilize the formula properly in coming up with what you should have paid in real estate taxes. When that claim was presented to the carrier said, that's not covered. So those claims, when they were initially raised, now the court's saying in 1999, but particularly the August 2000 letter, where you first get something that puts it in paper, what are they talking about? That was sounded only in additional funds, not attacking or even questioning, did the village properly calculate the costs of the plan, which is what the insurance policy was purchased to defend claims, specifically attacking calculation of the cost of the plan.
Can you help me? I'm not sure I understand all this, but it seems to me that the fund has been underfunded, at least according to these allegations, for decades. Is that correct?
I would say, Your Honor, that is a central part of the funding of these plans. It is present. There is always an unfunded liability. The amount or percentage of that can change from fund to fund. And that letter in August said, we want you to pay these monies from your utility tax source to get our average up to the... Yes, Judge.
This has been going on since 1966 or something like that. It seems odd that an insurance policy that's issued in February of 01 is going to cover any of these underfunding incidents that occurred in the 35 years before that.
It would be odd, Your Honor, but that's not the protection that the village was purchasing. Not that they wanted the insurance company to pay the underfunded amount. They wanted the insurance company to defend claims that arose out of allegations that you improperly calculated the cost of the plan. If the pension fund, assume for the purposes since 1960 onward, every year calculated that cost and what it had to pay in correctly, each and every time, there would still have been an unfunded liability portion, because the assets it's collecting in 1960 or 1961 aren't going to pay 100% of the projected liabilities of these pensioners as they're retiring 20 years later. So there's always present in these pension funds a certain percentage of unfunded liability. That's not the protection that Franklin Park purchased from St. Paul. It purchased a plan that specifically said, we will cover claims arising out of the calculation of costs of the benefit plan. So if there were errors made, which in the original complaint, when it finally was filed as a claim, there were claims that sounded in, these are calculation mistakes, that you made mistakes in the plan. The underlying litigation...
I understand that that's what the complaint said, the first, second, the initial complaint on up to the second amended complaint, but... A claim and a lawsuit are two different things. I mean, the policy itself talks about claims or suits. And the village has actually even made a payment to the fund in November of 2000, partial payment, $133,529. So even if we translate what Judge Evans is talking about into at what point does the village have notice of claims against it? It seems that it's before this policy begins.
Those, once again, Your Honor, were claims to make additional payments, not claims that would implicate the policy protection against, did the village properly calculate what it had to pay in via the real estate tax levy. That is what the action filed by the underlying plaintiffs raised, that issue. They raised in their initial complaint that those calculations were not proper. In fact, Your Honor, if I can
So you're saying that the August 2000 letter isn't a demand for damages, but somehow this later lawsuit is a demand for damages?
Yes, Your Honor. And, in fact, that's the position that St. Paul took. And Judge Kaur recognized that. He said that you can't speak out of both sides of your mouth as the carrier and say we don't have to defend this because it wasn't a demand for money when the lawsuit was filed, but earlier claims for additional funding from sources not even implicated by the funding statute were claims.
But it does seem to me that if they were, I mean, if they were claims, they were claims both times, and you're late. If neither one of them is a claim, then you're out on different grounds. You haven't suffered any damages.
Your Honor, if a claim was made to the village for actions that were not covered under the policy, there would be no coverage and there would be no requirement to tender that to the carrier. That is the position that the village took, and that is the position that St. Paul took when the actual claims were filed. The village took that position with respect to the request for these municipal utility taxes that have no bearing in the funding statute. They aren't mentioned, they aren't utilized. The funding statute talks about you have to calculate how much real estate taxes you're going to pay. Those demands were, you know what, we want to get our funding level up so that the percentage of unfunded liability goes down so that we feel more secure. Give us some extra money.
Well, maybe. Let me ask you about something different. You know, as of May 16, 2002, that St. Paul is denying coverage. That's when that letter happens. And the village waits a few months and writes a letter in October disputing the denial of coverage. And then kind of nothing happens for a really long time, for a year and a half. And then St. Paul eventually says in 2004, in the middle of the year, we really mean it. We're not going to cover this. And then they get around to filing their declaratory judgment action. The village isn't doing much either at that point to pursue St. Paul, is it?
With respect to pursuing St. Paul, no. Its attention was focused on defending the underlying claims, Your Honor. They had already at that stage had the original complaint amended, had the first amended complaint, the majority of those counts dismissed with prejudice, and then had a second amended complaint filed. How many, if St. Paul is saying we really mean we're not going to defend you, didn't the village really mean we think you should back in October or back when it first tendered it? Two bites at the apple that the village took. What would a third get us? We believed them that they weren't going to defend the claim. And it was true because this litigation, the underlying litigation, had proceeded to substantive rulings. Cross motions for summary judgment in the underlying litigation had been on file 4 months before St. Paul filed their declaratory action. We knew they weren't coming in to defend the village. With regard to
your rebuttal time,
thank you, Your Honor.
Whatever you want.
Very quickly, under either standard of the estoppel principle, St. Paul should be estopped. If you use the reasonable time test, 34 months is not a reasonable time. If you utilize the imminent resolution, this underlying litigation was going to be resolved based on those cross motions for summary judgment that were filed and pending. Not only were they going to be dispositive, they actually were dispositive. That was, to paraphrase Winston Churchill, more the beginning of the end, not the end of the beginning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dunn.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Rory Dunn. I represent St. Paul Fire and Marine, and I'm going to limit my comments, given the amount of briefing that's been filed in this matter on the issues, to several points that Mr. Durkin made. First, this is not an estoppel case. As the briefing indicates, and I think your Honor's questions indicate, the first order of business is determine whether or not there was coverage of the initial demand in 2000 and of the suit in 2002.
That may be right, Mr. Dunn, but I have to say, I think you would not really want this to be an estoppel case, would you? I mean, I can't find any Illinois case that has thought that waiting around for 24 months or more is a reasonable time period to wait for filing a declaratory judgment action.
You're 100% right, Your Honor. We don't want this to be an estoppel case, and it's not an estoppel case.
All right.
And the other reason it's not an estoppel case is, and I think when we started briefing this in the district court, the issue of indemnity was still an issue. But as the record indicates, there was a judgment entered right before the district court here ruled on summary judgment, and the village, in essence, prevailed. And so there is nothing to be estopped here. In other words, if Your Honors determine coverage, which the Del Monte case recognizes that that's the court's first credo, St. Paul goes home with the victory. If, however, the court decides that estoppel is an issue, it doesn't matter, because what is at issue in the case is the village's defense fees. And so there's no reason for this court to make an estoppel decision and wade into the debate as to what the Illinois Supreme Court is going to do as to the reasonableness test versus the imminency test.
Well, the defense costs would be something. I mean, I'm not quite sure I followed you on that.
Well, but Your Honor, if you find that there's coverage.
Yeah, if we were to find there's coverage.
Then we owed a duty to defend, and we'd be fighting out
have
about.
Have to reimburse their defense.
So there's really not anything to be estopped over. If we have coverage, we owe the defense.
Right.
If we don't owe coverage, we don't owe the defense. And so.
Okay.
Sorry for being confusing on that one, Your Honor. But that's the reason it's not an estoppel case. And you're right, Your Honor. We don't want to go into.
Well, you're essentially just saying it all collapses into this question of coverage one way or the other. You know, was the claim filed in time? Did the policy cover this kind of thing?
Correct, Your Honor.
So what about Mr. Durkin's argument that this is in a more finely tuned way about where the money was going to come from to support the fund, whether it was going to come from these real estate taxes, whether these were just gratuitous payments that were being requested in 2000 and that were in part being made then?
Well, I don't think, Your Honor, that whether or not the allegations are more finely tuned matters. I think what matters is, in the first instance, is there a claim for damage for covered loss resulting from administration from a wrongful act? And I think we demonstrate in our briefs that you go through each one of those facets of the insuring agreement, and the village has failed to sustain its burden of demonstrating that the allegations trigger any of those items. And so Your Honor was absolutely right. The initial question is why in 2000, when the village got this demand resulting from Mr. Ivanelli and Mr. Horn's repeated demands to put the issue of litigation against the village for the underfunding, the same harm that's at issue in the coverage litigation, for the underfunding on the agenda, and they refused. That same underfunding was the origin of the $4 million demand, and in fact the village, as Your Honor points out, decided that it was only going to pay $133,000 of that, despite the fact that that underfunding was told to the village by the Illinois Department of Insurance. And if you look at the first amended complaint, the second amended complaint, and the third amended complaint, they attach year after year what actuarially the village should have paid and what they didn't pay. And so Mr. Durkin's recharacterization of the allegations to try to fit it in to this miscalculation recharacterization doesn't work, because you still haven't complied with all four elements of the insuring agreement. In other words, damages, that Mr. Ivanelli and Mr. Horn actually suffered some compensable loss. If you look at the allegations, they all are to benefit the fund, and they all are for remedial action to expunge from the village monies that the village never was entitled to in the first instance.
Let me ask you a question about the coverage this way. This is a claims-made policy, of course, and essentially I think you're arguing that this claim arises before this policy ever existed. It sounds to me like that might actually be a coverage point in the sense that known wrongful acts are excluded, right, from the policy.
Correct, Your Honor. That's yet another reason there's an exclusion for known wrongful acts. And here, I think the demand and the allegations in the complaint where it says the firemen were telling the village, you got to fund the fund. You're not funding the fund. Put it on the agenda because we need to sue you. You know, we need to sue the village to do what they're supposed to do under the pension code, and they were doing it. So, Your Honor, you're exactly right. I mean, that is the issue. This is a claims-made policy, and the language that you were talking about, this the known wrongful acts exclusion
yeah.
Because it's a claims-made policy, it doesn't have a notice provision, but that's yet another way, in addition to the insuring agreement, which says that any claim or suit first made prior to the policy is not covered. And so, Your Honor's right. I mean, the village has the problem of you can't argue that the initial demand for $4 million, and whether you want to characterize it from a surplus, it was to address the underfunding, the harm that is alleged in the suit, the same underfunding of the pension plan. And that's what the lawsuit was about, was to basically disgorge the fund, or excuse me, the village, from monies owed to the fund and owed to the fund for 40 years, as Your Honor points out. The other point I wanted to make, and I from Your Honor's questions, I think it's a non-issue, and that's the whole issue of waiver as to this argument that the claim was first made prior to the policy. And the village asserts that we needed to file a cross-claim on that, and we're not trying to change, as I understand this court's opinion, the bottom line of the case. Bottom line of the case is we have no duty to defend or no duty to indemnify, and therefore we're not trying to change that, for obviously.
Yeah, as long as you're not trying to expand the judgment in any way to give you more relief than it gave you, you can defend a judgment on any ground.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That was raised and not waived below.
Mr. Durkin indicated that the suit might have been different from the 2000 claim because the village was now seeking a defense. But the village is, again, only entitled to a defense if there's coverage for the suit or the demand in the first instance, and as I think we demonstrate, that there's no coverage for that.
Yeah, you may have taken the roll the dice approach to this coverage, you know, by not filing a declaratory judgment or defending under reservation of rights. This court has said those are probably the two prudent things somebody can do, but you can, in fact, just not defend and hope that you're right in the end.
That's right, Your Honor. And unfortunately, we didn't roll the dice. Maybe we were a little bit bold in when we filed, but we didn't roll the dice. We did file a deck action. And then the last point I want to make is, again, Mr. Durkin artfully tries to pigeonhole the suit into the miscalculation. And I think Judge Kaur also indicated that he thought there may have been allegations triggering the administrative functions. As the title of the policy indicates, this is an employee benefit errors and omissions policy. The wrongful conduct language includes negligence. So this policy is basically meant to cover and compensate for miscalculations made by the village in advising the fund's beneficiaries.
But it doesn't really say that. I mean, and when you look at the language of the various complaints, they do have a lot of negligence language in them. It looks to me like if you get that far and you're following Illinois law, construing policies in favor of the insured, making sure that you're not being too narrow about it, there are negligence claims, and part of the administration of a fund might be collecting the money that you're funding the fund with.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. I think if you look at the functions as a whole, they all are addressing information out as opposed to calculating what the fund is. I mean, as the complaints replete with, the village is mandated by the law to rely on actuarials to tell them what it is to fund. And in this case, it's alleged that the village hired some actuaries and the fund hired some actuaries. So I would would indicate that I don't believe that calculation is, in fact, the village's function, nor is it what the administrative acts are under the policy.
The policy. Okay.
So at the end of the day, Your Honor, I asked this court to affirm the lower court and find that St. Paul has no duty to defend or indemnify because of the fact that the lawsuit never triggered the insuring agreement of the policy. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Durden?
Yes, Your Honor. Judge Wood, you brought up the point that why, in addition to recovering the costs of defense, which in this case were not de minimis, estoppel is very important here because this is one of those cases where 4 years of litigation of the underlying litigation far outweighed the recovery. And, in fact, as Mr. Dunn stated, the village prevailed in the underlying litigation. There was no underfunding here. But the estoppel argument is important because any known wrongful acts that this court is questioning, whether the village had knowledge or not, they can't raise that if you find estoppel here. They're barred from raising that. And
well, the policy is never triggered. You're looking at it as an exclusion under the policy, but if you never get into the policy, then I don't think estoppel counts.
I would agree, Your Honor. But estoppel in this case is important because it prevents the carrier from running away from the benefit of the bargain that it made. As Judge Evans questioned earlier, what's the benefit here of purchasing a policy for coverage regarding costs of calculation of pension benefits if there's always this unfunded liability present anyway? Did we buy something that was illusory? What are they selling? They're supposed to sell us protection from claims that are brought that the village prevailed in ultimately. There was no underfunding, so claims for underfunding that could have been made prior to the filing of the suit. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will take the case under advisement.